Talk Radio.
For the Earl Morgan Hour. Brace yourself.
What's happening now?
This episode is brought to you in part by independent insurance agent H. Roscoe Jr., business accountant. Know Your Business, 731-733 Grand Street, Jersey City, New Jersey. Also, our friends at DeClaire Publishing, that's DeeCLaRe Publishing, LLC, reinforcing the priorities of God, family, and community through literacy. You can reach them at 1-888-350-9721. That's 1-888-350-9721.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello, this
yes,
is Jack Egan. Speak. I'm good. Who is this, please?
This is the co-host.
This is what?
Oh,
the yes.
Co-host.
I'm supposed to be on the. I'm
hello?
To be on the, hello, Earl?
Yes, that's me, Jack. I'm on.
Okay.
Senior, I'm on.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Okay, now we got these glitches worked out. Okay, Jack, let me introduce the show. I don't know what Tylon is doing on his end, but I suspect you're on, so here we're going on right now.
Right.
Okay?
Okay. Yep.
Okay, good evening, GoPro audience. It's Wednesday, 7 p.m. So this must be the Earl Morgan Show. I'm Earl Morgan. I'm here with my co-host, Tina Bland. How are you doing this chilly wintry evening, Tina?
Fantastic. It's beautiful, isn't it?
I'm waiting for summer. well, we have an interesting guest tonight, Jack Egan, who will also be speaking to us by phone. And who was Jack Egan, you might ask? Well, he's not only a witness to history, he's been intimately involved in making it for decades as a civil rights activist, an author, and a former Catholic priest, whose activities led him to problems with the church, and he left the priesthood. Relevantly, Jack was arrested. Among the things that Jack has done, and I mean there are many, many of them, let's go back to all the way back to 1969 or 1970 for the one of the most currently relevant things that Jack was involved in, when he's arrested by police in Jersey City, along with one-time former Councilman Jamie Vasquez and young Puerto Ricans in Jersey City who were protesting against police brutality and he says were framed as five cops lied in court. That was one thing. Jack also was in so many nonviolent protests that I know because I was there back in the 60s and the 70s that they're incalculable. He also worked with the American Civil Liberties Union on bail and jail reform, collected money for bail on behalf of nonviolent offenders, stuck for months in Hudson County jails while awaiting trials. Worked with a few people in an abandoned church across from the old jail in Hudson County, which was on Pavonia Avenue, aiding draft resistance to the war in Vietnam, urging the Hudson County fee holders and an unreceptive warden and chaplains at jail reform. Gave church, also worked with Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta, and California Mexican farm workers seeking fair wages and decent treatment for agribusiness farm owners. That was the beginning of the unions out there for organizing for farm workers. Troubles with the then Archbishop for preaching against the war, of all things, and for being one of 20 priests opposing racism and racist priests in the Archdiocese, imagine that, and then got into a lot of trouble for articles he wrote, and eventually he left the priesthood. He's been in, as I said, countless demonstrations with justice and priests, arrested 29 or 30 times, one of them at the Pentagon, with Daniel Berrigan, who some of you young people won't remember, but there were two priest brothers, the Berrigan brothers, who were anti-war activists. I mean, these guys wreaked havoc on the Pentagon, the FBI, and the administrations, several administrations, in a struggle about that war. He's written many articles against the death penalty, for health care, against the health care industry, and in his own words, injustice wherever, and he cites the Reuben Carter imprisonment and the Martin Sustridge unjust imprisonment. Says basically all my troubles were caused, this is Jack in his words, by an inability to keep my mouth shut and my feet still in the face of heaven, my mouth shut and my feet out of the face of injustice going on as deep on the earth's trails. I could not speak the truth. I had to be a whistleblower for life and against the necrophilic forces trying to annihilate the divine we. All breath to communion with all beings. Also, Jack has written several books, one titled Baptism of Resistance, Blood and Celebration, another book, A Priest Forever and No More, by John, A Priest Forever and No More, and Pilgrimage Within, Contemplations of a Lifelong Activist, by John P. Egan. Welcome to the Earl Morgan Hour, John. Let's start with this whole business of your being arrested in Jersey City in a protest about police brutality. It echoes through the decades to today. What happened back then?
Can you hear me, Earl?
Yes, I can.
Okay. What happened was I was on the streets. You know, I got very involved in the parish in downtown St. Boniface. And they were mostly. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. They were mostly Latin American people, at that point mostly from Puerto Rico. And what happened was there were two young Puerto Ricans who were brutalized by the police. So we had a bunch of demonstrations, and Jamie Vasquez and myself and several other people were trying to keep the whole thing nonviolent. And then, and finally, we wanted to talk with the mayor, but the mayor wouldn't talk with us until finally he agreed. And I was going to try to gather the people together so that they would hear me and learn that Mayor Whelan was finally going to talk with us. And then comes a policeman with his gun drawn through the streets on Barrow Street. And I'm saying to myself, oh, my God. I said to him, what are you doing? What are you doing with your gun drawn? And then we had to make a line to stop the people from going after him and whatnot. And then another policeman came and went through. And then a whole bunch of police hiding behind somewhere came charging into all of us. And I wound up on a sidewalk with a Puerto Rican couple that I knew. And then they charged me, having warned me before that they were going to get me, they charged me with interfering with an arrest. And so five of them lied on the stand and said that I had blocked somebody who was throwing a brick, and there was no truth to that at all. And so on. It was a trial. A lot of people came, and And then Jeremiah O'Callaghan, who was the judge, convicted me anyway, even though I had a priest testifying for me, even though even the Archbishop, the then Archbishop Boland, together with several priests, wrote a half page, got a half page ad in the Jersey Journal supporting me, saying that if you're interfering with a priest's work on the streets, then you know, you should stop and desist. But they didn't, you know. So I won on an appeal. Some people gathered together and got...
Good.
Hello?
Yes,
can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So that's what happened. And then I don't know if that was my first or second arrest, but I was, as you put it, I was very involved with the peace movement, Dan Berrigan, Phil Berrigan, and several others.
Could you tell us something about the Berrigan brothers? Because some of our younger people out there, including
yeah, that's right. I noticed
wouldn't
that.
Wouldn't know
yeah.
who the Berrigan brothers are. So would
right,
you explain
right,
a
right.
little, give a little background
right.
there?
They were tremendously involved in a peace movement. They did several actions that got them both in jail. What they were doing basically was getting a movement started that would go into draft boards. And in the case of Dan Berrigan and Phil and I think, five others, they got to draft cards and took them out. I forget where now it was. But anyway, and took them out of the, and then burned them with napalm and waited to be arrested. And they were arrested, and there was a whole to-do about that. And then, and Phil had already been involved with some drafting, and then he's involved again. So eventually, though, they were involved in so many different things that the FBI, Edgar Hoover, indicted them for, what was it now? Indicted them for supposedly kidnapping Kissinger and all this stuff, you know? And so we wound up, I went down there, it was a big trial in Baltimore. And it, predictably, they were all acquitted, thank goodness. So, and it's a long story, you know, it goes on and on with different things. But,
well, let me ask you this. Let me lay some background here. Because for many, many people, not only the Vietnamese War, but the protests against the war, ancient history. Because in our country, anything that didn't happen last week becomes ancient history. And
There's
no telling them, it's hard to explain to people.
It is
how
hard, yes.
Today, how
yes.
involved that was. You had a draft, and a lot of people resisted the draft, wouldn't go
exactly.
to Vietnam. I remember a friend of mine who actually went to Danbury, David Bell, for
to visit
refusing
Dan and Phil?
To go to war.
Oh, and to visit Phil, I guess. Huh? Went to Danbury.
Yeah. Oh, yes, that's right. And you know, it's funny.
That's where Phil and Dan were, you know. Yeah.
Yes. To show you how funny it is and how the times were, David was arrested in one of those demonstrations that you were in. He was arrested and put in the county jail, right? So David said what he did was he's in the jail, and he gathers a bunch of inmates in the jail. This is Dodson County Jail. And starts saying, talking in a loud voice and saying things like Marx and revolution.
Yeah.
And he said they actually threw him out of jail.
Yeah, they actually threw him out. Oh, jeez, that's really weird. You know, I wound up in the Hudson County Jail among several other jails, but because I was working a lot with Cesar Chavez and the farm workers, and who Cesar had brought a whole bunch of farm workers from California on a bus, and they had on Barrow Street, I think it was, they had this house where Cesar would come and talk with them, and then we would plan things and where to boycott and so on like that. Anyway, I wound up in Hudson County Jail one time because this car, I was picketing, I think, by a Pathmark or Grand Union in on 440, I forget. And all of a sudden, we're just giving out leaflets. We're not doing anything illegal. This cop comes on me and pushes me around and says I need to and arrest me, you know. And so, like, I wound up in Hudson County Jail, and I would not pay the bail. I had that thing of not paying bails because I was trying to be in union with so many of the nonviolent prisoners who couldn't pay the bails, and they couldn't get out of jail until their trial, which could be months and months, I think even up to
months
a year.
Months and months,
you know?
Yeah.
So, like, so what happened was, this is kind of a funny story, like, so I'm in the Hudson County Jail overnight, and this judge calls me, I think it was a Sunday, actually, and says, oh, we didn't mean to keep you in jail or anything like that, or give you a $500 bail or whatever. So he freed me right away. And you know what was beautiful?
Without bail.
Huh?
Without bail.
I'm sorry?
He freed you without bail.
Yeah, without bail, exactly, right. There was no bail or anything like that. And then what happened was a whole bunch of parishioners from St. Boniface were outside the jail. You know, do you remember Hudson County Jail with the big copper doorway and whatnot, you know, and all that stuff?
Yes.
I think
we're talking
copper.
About the old jail.
The old Hudson County Jail on
Pavonia.
What was it? Pavonia, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
like, I come out, and they're all singing, you know, trying to get me out of jail, and I think they thought it was a miracle, like with St. Paul when he got out of jail that time. You know what I mean? So I come out,
yeah.
And they were like, anyway, that was interesting, you know. So anyway, so that's what my whole life. What happened with me? I know, is that for some reason Pope John the 23rd was a really wonderful guy. Actually, you know, he was really a peasant, no matter what. He's supposed to have said that, you know, the Pope has declared himself infallible. I had a council to declare it. He said, you know, this is John the 23rd, if they tell me if I sit in that chair up there on that throne, I'll be infallible, I'll never sit there. He's a very, and so he excited us all and urged people to go to Latin America to save, you know, well, you know, to bring them to the, quote, true church and all that stuff. Well, I volunteered, and finally the then Archbishop allowed me to go to a place that they had adopted in Central America, in Honduras. And so I went there, and I'll tell you, I was stunned. It was my first airplane ride. I was stunned by the incredible poverty that people were living in, and the malnutrition and stuff like that, you know. So, it was where I really became what you call conscientized, you know. And
let me
I
ask
came
you
back.
This, Jack, and then I'm going to turn. I'm going to ask Jeannie to come in. But the new Pope, he's not. You know, he's. I don't know how you can call popes progressive. I don't know what that. I don't even know how to put it in that context.
Yeah,
but this
yeah.
guy does seem to be a bit different, and he does seem to take. His position, he will not live in the palaces where everybody else has always lived. You know, I think it was Bill Maher, who Lord knows is not a religious guy. Once in one of his movies, he was with a priest, friend of his in the Vatican, and he pointed to one of those gorgeous palaces that, you know, that belong up on the
Yes.
And he said and Bill Maher said to the priest friend of his, he said, do you think Jesus Christ would live in that place?
As a matter of fact, in the scriptures, you know, it said Jesus had no place to even lay his head. He was basically a homeless person, you know, with an itinerant with people gathering around him. The thing is, with the Pope Francis, he's doing very well in some areas, obviously, you know. And he is trying to live at least the message of Jesus, which is not living in a palace, living simply, very simply, you know. And the whole business of a Pope living in a 1,000-room Vatican violates the whole message of Jesus, you know.
It does seem to be different than if Jesus is the role model,
Yeah.
Wow, that's a
it seems to me that
he's just walking around with 12 guys with a robe and a pair of sandals.
People have to have audiences with this guy, with whoever the Pope is. What's good about Pope Francis, but the problem with that is he is trying to live the message of Jesus, trying to live simply and all of that stuff and be in more contact with people and so on. But he can't move on the issue of women, which to me, well, that's ultimately part of why I got in such trouble. You know?
Well, at this point, Jack, let me interrupt you because the person on the other end of this line is a woman.
Yeah.
Named Tina Bland, who is my co-host, my neighborhood, my neighborhood organization president, and one dynamo. I mean, you know, this woman cuts through all the nonsense.
Beautiful.
You know, you're talking about that. I'd like to see what she has to say about that.
I would love that, too, yeah. I would love that.
Tina?
What is it, Anika?
Tina, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm listening to a commercial in the background. But I did have a question. It's wonderful to have you on air tonight. Good evening. How are you?
Good evening. I'm good. Is it Anika? Is that the way you say your name?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
I would love it if you could just tell us what...
High People magazine calls it smart and funny. The right conservative says, this show needs Jesus. The Roll Up Radio Show with Julie Indica, Tylan Washington, and Summer Alstein. Only on the GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Why are you paying for radio? Are you serious? GoPro Radio offers content for free. Go to www.goproradio.com and listen to original, irreverent, and exceptional talk shows. It's free. Go to www.goproradio.com now. It's that simple and free. www.goproradio.com. Listen to the voices in your head.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Earl Morgan Hour. Brace yourself.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Tina?
What happened there? I don't know.
We had a commercial break and nobody... Somehow we didn't get the... I didn't hear them going into it. Tina,
Do
you have a question?
Yes, I do. And good evening. It's wonderful having you on the show tonight.
Good evening. It's great hearing about you also, too. Okay, Annika,
I have a question for you. And it's about the civil rights work you've done. I'd like to know what was your earliest impetus that started you on this path?
The earliest.
Yes.
I think what happened with me was that the first book I wrote, by the way, I dedicated to the mestizo children of Honduras who woke me up from a deep, dead slumber so I could see, woke me up so I could live. And the thing is that they were little children who all with swollen bellies. I was in my white cassock, and what happens is they're hugging me and smiling, and I said, oh, my God, I got it. And then the second thing that happened to me, which really got me, was I'm baptizing a baby in this little church in the area where I was in Honduras, and then outside of Tegucigalpa, the capital, and the mom is trying to nurse the baby, and she's clearly malnutrition herself. And she probably thought that as a priest I could save the poor child, you know. And the baby died while I was baptizing it. And I says to myself, this cannot be God's will. This is the will of humans who are making all this money in the banana industry and in the most fertile land that they took from the Honduran people. And this is what's happening.
Honduras was a very very fertile land, could have fed all of its 2 million people at that time with no problem. And that's what happened. I came back to the U.S. about 2.5 years after being a little while in an experimental parish in Panama, which, by the way, was wonderful. And then I just very soon got involved with the Barragans and so on, with the peace movement, with local justice issues, with the farm workers, with, against the South African apartheid, and so on and so on and so on, you know. It just, I think what happened to me was, I fell in love with people, you know, and everybody. And like always now when in Honduras, where I mean in St. Boniface in Jersey City where I was, we and the Puerto Rican people had a wonderful relationship. I would go up all these tenement stairs and have eat with them, arroz con habichuelas, rice with beans and whatnot. And we formed this incredible relationship. I was there with them when babies were born, marriages, when their beloveds were dying, and so on and so on and so on. And that was the beginning. For me, that was it. I would, you know, go ahead. You want to ask something, Earl?
I have a question about that. You're talking about downtown and the Puerto Rican people.
Cost you your career and the people.
What did she say? What did Annika?
Would you repeat
at what
that,
point,
senior?
I want to know, at what point, mental point, did you realize this may very well cost you your career in the priesthood? You're consistently speaking out. At what point did you realize you had to make a decision?
Yeah, it took a long time. I should have done it before I did it, but I was 25 years a priest. And I was going through tremendous mental turmoil because I felt like I was being inauthentic. I no longer believed in hierarchy or in the disparagement of women and sexuality. And so I'm a writer. I write also. So I wrote one article that I got in trouble for, which was about celibacy, and I said it was not making, doesn't make any priests more spiritual, more dedicated to people, or this or that, but it was because it was in the late 1100s, the church, the Roman Catholic Church, made it celibacy mandated, which of course is against nature to start with. But here's the thing, I wrote this piece that got published in this national paper, and basically said that the reason why the Roman Catholic Church insisted on celibacy, mandated it for its priests, was because it had so much wealth and so much power that it did not want to give any of it up to children, women and children, and so on, you know. And that was the real reason. So the then Archbishop, who liked me, by the way, and was ultimately the one who, and he even wrote an article supporting me when I was in jail one time, Archbishop Garrity, Peter Garrity, and also, by the way, wrote a beautiful note to my mother when he told me I had to leave, saying that he really respected what I was about and whatnot. Anyway, so I finally wrote this article after being in turmoil. I said, I have to do this. I can't be authentic and keep my soul, you know, without writing. So I got published after 25 years as a priest and basically said that I didn't believe in hierarchy or that you needed a priest or anybody to ordain you, that we all meant to be priests in the style of Jesus, you know, to wash each other's feet, to love one another as I have loved you, to share your body and blood with everybody, to share your life, basically, you know. And then I got in serious trouble for that, I had to leave, huh?
You know,
I was told I had to leave. I mean, I didn't have a choice.
You're a theological anarchist. That's what you are.
What? What am I?
A theological anarchist.
Well,
you were throwing
real
bombs in there.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't know I think, you know, the church is really basically a Roman Catholic Church, anarchic, because it's really a fascistic system where the Pope can excommunicate people because they're for supporting women's ordination and stuff like that. You know? But anyway, what happened was, and then so the Archbishop called me. He wrote a letter saying that he would really was terribly upset with the article. And then, so I went to see him, and he even, in front of nobody, except himself, he got the secretary.
Oh, we're going to break.
Out of the room. Hello? Am
yes,
I there
yes,
yet?
Yes, we're going to
he's
break.
He's telling us we're coming up on
okay.
a break.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jack, just hang on for a minute, because we're coming
okay,
up on a hard break.
Yep.
Just don't go anywhere. Just hang on.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right.
Thank
this
you.
Is GoPro Radio, the Earl Morgan Hour with Tina Bland. Now, we have to rename this program because it doesn't work without Tina Bland. It's not just the Earl Morgan Hour. But we'll talk about that again another time. All right? We're going to go to a break. Just hang on, everybody.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your ears.
The Bus Street Journal calls the Roll Up Radio Show audacious. The Puffington Post says it's irreverent. High People magazine calls it smart and funny. The Right Conservative says, this show needs Jesus. The Roll Up Radio Show with Julie Indica, Tylan Washington, and Summer Alstein. Only on the GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Why are you paying for radio? Are you serious? GoPro Radio offers content for free. Go to www.goproradio.com and listen to original, irreverent, and exceptional talk shows. It's free. Go to www.goproradio.com now. It's that simple and free. www.goproradio.com. Listen to the voices in your head. Oh, and did I mention? It's free!
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Earl Morgan Hour. Brace yourself.
An hour.
Okay, you're back.
Hello.
Okay.
We're back.
Hello.
Hey, don't I hear from you?
Do you have another question?
Can
we're
you
back on,
that,
Jack.
I'm sorry?
We're back on now. And
okay,
I'm
great.
Going to turn it
great.
Over to Tina for a minute and see if she has something she wants to ask you. Tina, are you there?
Yes, I do.
Tina?
Yes, I am. I think that we are so fortunate, we, society, that you were a man of conscience. Speaking to the man of conscience, it must have been very difficult to speak out against the draft and the Vietnam War. Can you please shed a little insight on that time in your life?
Yeah. I think I had been back from Honduras maybe 2 or 3 years, and I had clearly at that point been opposed to any war, actually, certainly the Vietnam War. So I gave a talk at St. Boniface in English, actually, to the small ethnic community that was still there. It's a little church, St. Boniface on First Street. No longer exists. But in any event, I said that I really was beginning to question everything about the U.S. involvement with the Vietnam War. And I said that even women and children were being killed in the little villages where they had this whole process of destroy everything to save it, destroy everything that moves, was the way they put it. And so then I felt compelled to speak against it because of the message of Jesus, which is nonviolence, you know. Love even your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Pray for those who persecute you. All that stuff, you know. And Peter put back the sword. Those who live by the sword will die by the sword. So I thought, and I knew I would probably get in trouble for that. So I saw people walk out on me. And then 3 days later, I got a letter from the then Archbishop Boland, who said, "Reports outreach our office that you gave a talk criticizing U.S. policy in Vietnam. You had no right doing so." Da, 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 da. And he wanted me to shut up, but I didn't shut up, you know. So I'm going because they need a priest at this church in Bloomfield, St. Thomas, a big church. And so in fear, my hands were really shaking, but I knew I had to do this. And then I opposed the Vietnam War and said that there's nothing political. Richard Nixon has dropped more bombs on the Vietnamese people than all the bombs in the Second World War, I think it was. So I saw a whole bunch of people walk out on me, you know, and my hands were shaking. But I don't know how I got through the rest of it, but I did. And then what happened was the usher or the person, you know, he got so scared about my safety that he called the police in to protect me in case they attacked me for it, you know. And so then it went on and on like that, you know. So I felt compelled at that point to speak against what is evil, what is anti-life and so on, you know. And kept doing it.
Let me ask you this, Jack, because to bring that up, we in our society, we have a problem with history. Because many people come to America to forget their past. They don't want to talk about the history. They just want to dwell in the present and the future. But we went into Iraq twice. And the second time was a 10 or 9 year war, which was the longest war America had ever fought up to that point. It seems to me like we went into Iraq. I don't think there's any doubt about it now. On a false premise, there were no
weapons of mass destruction because Scott Ritter was the head of a whole UN delegation checking it out, and Saddam Hussein allowed them to do that, and they destroyed all of their weapons of mass destruction. When the U.S. sent Colin Powell to justify
UN.
The whole thing, you know, then,
the reason why I'm asking you about that is to show you why history is important. The United States went into Vietnam supposedly to fight communism and ended up, like you said, dropping more ordnance except for the atomic bombs on Vietnam. But it's almost like we didn't learn anything because we turned around and did it again.
Exactly. And notice this, that the U.S. dropped napalm on people. There's a famous photo of this young, maybe teenage, not
little
even
girl.
Maybe.
Yeah.
All burnt. Yeah. Remember that one?
Burnt up, naked, running down a railroad. Yes, that's a very famous picture.
And what about Agent Orange, which even affected our own soldiers?
Yeah.
You know,
again,
to destroy the crops. It's utterly evil, frankly.
You talk about Agent Orange. That affected so many soldiers, and they couldn't come home and get any help because
the Pentagon denied
Agent Orange was
and they were having defective babies and everything. You know what I mean?
The thing that gets me. That's true, but now we sent dozens, hundreds of guys over to Vietnam. Iraq, and they came home battered and beaten. And traumatized. It's almost
mentally,
like they did the same thing over again. And it was, 50 years later?
Yeah, exactly. And now add to it, these poor soldiers, they don't know anything. They think they're doing the right. You know what I mean? And then they come back, and there's so many of them are committing suicide. Because they're so traumatized and mentally disturbed by the whole thing. I forget how many every day. It's like crazy,
And we
go on doing the same thing, you know?
Yeah,
weird.
What bothers me about this is that I think that the current president, doesn't want to go back into Iraq. He's made it clear. He
has made that clear, right.
Because that, you know, but it is very difficult for me to understand to how we could have blundered into that. I do think, do you think that the American people, the people who support the wars and pay the taxes for them and all that,
yeah,
they've got the, I think they got a bit gun shy about doing this stuff now.
Yes,
they don't
I think
do
so.
It. They don't want to run over there and do this again.
Well, that's at least something, you know. I mean, my God, you know.
Maybe
and, you
we
know,
have
they,
learned
they basically,
something.
What they do to the poor, my brother Tom was in the Vietnam War when I was in the peace movement, you know. But we stayed close to each other, and I wrote to him, and he wrote back to me. And he got esophageal cancer. He claims it was from Asian Orange. And Tom, I mean, it was just so warm and loving and everything like that. So so he's dying, and I'm visiting him. And I find out that he kept all the letters I sent to him, you know. And mm-hmm. I'm saying, you know, love passes beyond all that stuff, you know what I mean? And so Tom died, and he had an incredible funeral. He was so good with the veterans, trying to get food to their families. I mean, oh, the government should at least have enough food for the veterans, you know. And then what are they doing? I mean, neglecting this whole business about waiting forever to get psychological help, or you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
it's like
there
so
is a
ugly.
Tragedy here. There is a tragedy here that, you know, I have a theory. I don't know if you and Tina will support this, but I believe that we have so many casualties from the Iraqi war, the second Iraqi war specifically.
Yes.
Because we were told by the people who supported the war, what we called in those days the neocons, that went to testify on the Hill, to the Congress, that war would take a matter of months.
Yes.
It wouldn't
That's
be
right.
that long. And it wouldn't
That's
be
right.
That...
That's what they said. Yep.
And what happened was, instead of that, it took years. And killed a lot of people, and the VA
yes.
hospitals, which
yes.
came under tremendous pressure. The
yes.
reason I think they had so much trouble treating their patients was because nobody expected that many.
That's right.
You know, they didn't do anything to expand the Veterans Administration facilities and staff. So they've had the same people they had before the war trying to treat hundreds of patients.
Exactly.
Plus,
exactly.
with the new medicine, it kept a lot of guys alive that would have died.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, and all of this means more and more. We spent the cost was. I'm hoping, and I don't know how you feel about it, Tina, but I'm hoping that may have. You know, shocked us into reality. They spent
yes.
$1 trillion, maybe $2 trillion, beating up on a third world country.
Tell me
and
that.
Now
and
we
just
can't
a,
pay
just
our bills
imagine,
here.
Earl,
we can't put people
it's
to
just
work.
A bit of that, a couple billion dollars, which we were spending every week in Afghanistan. What that would do, there would be no homeless, there would be no hungry children in the USA, and yet there are hordes of people who are homeless. Somebody said about 5,000, and I think it was in Hudson County, you know?
Yeah,
and
the last census was 5,000.
Huh? Right?
The last census was 5,000 homeless.
Can you imagine this? And lots of women and children besides, you know? Can you imagine this? I mean, really...
We should really think about it from another point of view, too. When a soldier is hurt or killed, this affects an entire community.
Yes.
His family,
yes.
everyone
exactly.
that lives,
right. Right.
that knew
right.
him, neither
right.
his family nor that soldier can
One
lose
minute
their,
to break.
Their God-given potential. Everything
yep.
changes. And if we
yep.
took war more seriously, as in whoever wants to wage the war, we should bring it back to the times when they had to leave. You go out
when
there and fight.
They had to
you
wage the
war
themselves, you know. They were
That's
the generals
right.
had to fight in the wars
you
and
start.
Had to do this and that, you know what I mean? That's not funny, though. I'm not
and
laughing
we would
with
have
it sarcastic,
less wars,
you know?
Though. We would have far fewer wars.
Yes, we would. We probably have none. You know?
Well, you know, one of the things that made this possible, I believe,
going on break. Going on break.
End of the draft.
Going
okay,
on break.
We're going to a break. We'll be back. Please stay where you are. We have more with Jack Egan.
Okay.
Just stick there. Don't go nowhere. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Thank you.
2 minutes. They even have stuff on this thing.
Content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
The Bus Street Journal calls the Roll Up Radio Show audacious. The Puffington Post says it's irreverent. High People Magazine calls it smart and funny. The Right Conservative says this show needs Jesus. The Roll Up Radio Show with Julie Indica, Tylan Washington, and Summer Alstein, only on the GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Just hang on a minute.
Okay, I will.
We're back on.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
okay,
great.
This is GoPro Radio. This is Earl Morgan on the Earl Morgan Hour with my stalwart co-host, Tina Bland. And we're going to be renaming this show pretty soon because she's such a vital part of it. We are on today with today's guest. Tonight's guest, civil rights activist and civil disobedience raconteur, Jack Egan, who has lived a full life of struggle with conscience and struggle against the powers that be and trying to live his life to do the right thing. Jack, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Considering what you see now, today,
mm-hmm.
with the way that we're running things here in the good old U.S., how do you see things? What's your viewpoint of how things are going here? Where the government is going?
Yeah.
Where the people of America are going, and what is going on? What's your comment on the current events?
You know, I worked in oligarchy country, Honduras, most of them, maybe all of them were oligarchies. And we are now arriving at, and we now live in, I'm sorry to say this, an oligarchy. There's a guy by the name of Greg Palast who wrote a book called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. And even our Supreme Court stated that corporations are persons. And they can spend as much money as they want. So our democracy has been taken over by the corporations and a Congress who is bowing and kowtowing not to the corporations. We are no longer a government, if we ever really were, of and by and for the people of the USA. That's my short way. And the other side of me is I feel so disappointed, you know. You know, we were very arrogant. We thought, oh, now we've basically helped to end the Vietnam War. Lyndon Johnson didn't even run a second time. So we felt really good about ourselves. So it was arrogant. And things have gotten far worse, far worse. So I don't see, Earl, I really don't see where, I think this empire is just falling within like all empires do. But the hope is, and this is a big hope, there is throughout the world, and I see, and here too, a critical mass of people who are saying no to the shenanigans of this farcical government of ours, you know. And, you know, the different things, like there are a bunch of people, many people involved in the climate change, climate warming issue, you know. For example, the pipeline coming from Canada, you know, which is going to take away people's lands. They're trying to have people sell their livelihood, basically, you know, their farms and whatnot, so they can pollute the soil and the waters with the pipeline, which is all going to be from the, what do they call it, sands or something like that?
Oil sands, I believe.
Yeah, and all of that oil, by the way, is not to decrease our dependency on oil. And by the way, we should be doing that anyway by developing solar energy and hydro whatever energy and so on. You know? So what's happening is there's a rising group of, understandably, of people, farmers particularly, who are saying, we don't want it, you know, and they're demonstrating and everything, you know. There were 1,000 people.
You don't hear much about that, but there's a sizable contingent of people in the Midwest where that oil pipeline will run.
Yes.
And they're not only farmers, they're Native Americans. Because
what about them in Canada? Of course.
Their reservations, and they don't want it.
No, of course not. And the Canadian indigenous people don't want it either, you know?
No, they don't.
I mean, my God,
right,
look at what we've done to them. We practically decimated. It was almost like genocide. The nation was born on the blood of indigenous peoples, you know? And armed robbery of their land and so on, you know? It's really amazing, Earl. And so we've not only not changed, but we keep getting, it seems to me, worse and worse and worse, you know.
Well, one of the things
I don't mean we in the sense of the people. The people.
I know what you're talking about. I understand you're talking about.
One of
the things that got me that I was listening and contemplating the Koch brothers, who were two oil billionaires, were almost, as the kids in the street would say, stupid money. they're planning on spending.
Yeah.
$800 million on the campaign. That's as much money as any organized party or both organized parties would spend.
Yeah.
And these guys want to spend that kind of money so they can have the government to run the way they want. I think that's what you're talking about when you talk about oligarchy.
That's right.
I think, Earl, that may be past stupid money to insane money.
And what, you know what gets me, Jack?
No, I agree with you. Did you say insane?
Insane
and that's what
genius
money. Is insane money.
Yeah.
It's insanely insane money. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that gets me, the President of the United States got up last week, or I think it was last week, or the week before last, and said, what we need to do is give free college, community college.
Yes, I thought that
people,
was one.
Because we... And he wants to tax the rich.
How dare
he? He wants to tax that 1% that has so much money.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I will give this to Bill and Melissa Gates. They were worth 30 or 40 billion. They gave 15 billion away. I'm sure they can scrape by on 20 billion. But
I think
2 minute warning.
I am. I don't think they have any problem, you know, surviving.
No, and what the Republicans were already lining up and saying, why raise people's taxes? Well, these guys own all the money. They have more money than 90% of everybody else. That's crazy.
Yes.
Listen, Tina and Jack, we're running up on the end of the program.
I want to say it's great talking with both of you, and I admire both of you for staying in there. You know, I mean, you've stayed rooted in the same place and been forever. You know, Earl, you talk about me, but you've been involved and your way of resistance to me is doing the very wonderful writing that you do in the articles every Wednesday and whatnot, you know. So I really, and you've been consistent. You've been doing that too for since I've known you, which is I forget how old are you?
But you know, Jack, I got to tell you what my hope is, and this is, I have a daughter who is actually a friend of Tina's. I only live across the street from Tina. They're beginning to make me think that maybe Tina's essentially, because she is just a no hell so leather, no take, no prisoners. She
Beautiful.
Gets it done.
Beautiful.
She doesn't let anything get in her way. She just doesn't. And this
She's
is
one
what
of the hope
givers. Our future may be brighter with these young people. We're out of time. Jack, thanks a lot. Tina,
yeah, thank you, Earl. Thank you,
you.
Tina.
Thank you, Jack,
very
for
much.
A fantastic show.
Thanks,
please
thanks
come
a lot.
Back.
And keep up the good work, the two of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right,
bye.
You're gone.
Bye.
We're out. We'll see you next week.